live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Here it's 6:11, and in the continuing—I don't even know the word for it—adventure that is the Tribune Tower. Walked in this morning. The temperature in here is absolute zero, which is 212 below. Yesterday it was 212 above, and there's new landlords to the building, and we will be leaving the Tribune Tower sometime in 2018. I believe we're in the midst of a 10th Avenue freeze-out. I believe they are trying to get us to leave early.
Yeah. Reminds me of the Forrest Gump. What did he say? The temperature is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
It's more than a coincidence. One day it's 1,000 degrees. The next day it's 3 degrees.
Right. We need our winter parkas.
So we're going to move a bunch of folding chairs out to the sidewalk and do the show from there.
Yeah, they've also put some boxes, cardboard boxes in the office this morning.
Subtle.
It's very subtle.
Subtle. Yes, very subtle. Lots to talk about overnight last night. Some developments that you need to be aware of. We got a kid of the week today. In a 7 o'clock hour, we'll give you the Republicans and the Democrats view. A rising Republican, and by the way, a former Miss America, Erica Harold, Miss America 2003, a prominent young Republican woman, will be in, give you a little bit of information on her, and then Sarah Feigenholtz, one of my favorite Democrats.
Love Sarah Feigenholtz.
She'll be in after 7:30 to try in some way to explain to me why I could be wrong about Mike Madigan. Good luck, Sarah. Good luck. Dean Richards after 8, of course, and after 9, Rick Pearson will be in the studio, and we'll see if we get any updates on what's happening in Springfield from a big-time journalist. I don't know if you've met Rick. He's quite prominent.
Yeah.
Isn't Sarah, doesn't she like to do the baton, spin the baton?
No, that's Maria Pappas.
That's Maria Pappas. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to warn you to be aware of a thump in the head.
No, I've known Sarah for a long time. I like her a lot.
She's great.
She's wrong about many things, but I like her a lot.
You know what's great about her as well? She's always accessible if you need a whether anything
unlike
is pro-Democrat.
Unlike the guy she touts, Mike Madigan.
There could be, you know, just a surge of, you know, some backlash completely of some Democratic bill, and she will comment.
She'll
always
talk about it. Yeah. She's tough. Now, I will say this, for those of you who might be new to the program or only hear portions of the program, because obviously your commute is whatever your commute is. I have a simple philosophy, and that's the Democrats are destroying Illinois and the Republicans are destroying the country. So where would that put me? Kind of right in the middle. That probably is going to throw your whole morning off, but texters are welcome at 312-981-7200. I also have to pick up on yesterday's important text question because it dawned on me. We didn't get a chance to do much with it, and it dawned on me that we had no females respond.
Did we have female names?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The question came from Mark Harmon's show, The Beat. Mark's in for Dave Ennett this week. Mark, how are you?
Hi, Steve. Good to see you. It was a big topic last night on the old softball, Diamond Monday Night Softball. Umpire Brad behind the plate. I walked
Brad,
up.
There's another one.
Yeah. Brad, solid
I can
Brad.
Think of one Brad that I like and one Brad I really don't.
I think Brad on the whole is a solid Brad. You can trust Brad. He's not interesting. Brad's generally boring.
No, I know a very interesting Brad, Dr. Kevin Most's brother, Brad Most.
Right. Oh, yeah. Brad's always a nice guy, though, isn't he?
Brad Lee, Bradley Cooper.
Oh, he's
pretty
cute.
Good dude. He's
cutie.
He's a good dude. So the point is, this came up with Mitch and Mitchell Trubisky. And your claim is that Mitch is not a trustworthy name. Mitchell is.
Right. We're looking for the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. We need a solid, respectable, somebody that you just know you can count on. Mitchell, you can count on. Mitch, you really don't know what you're going to get.
And I brought up that I can trust a Matt. Never been able to trust a Matthew. And then a bunch of people chimed in. For instance, Mike Jacobson, Jake says, could never trust a Chaz.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. But it was interesting to me that no women chimed in. So I don't need to know why you don't trust the name or why the name gives you the willies. Just text in the name that you just can't deal with.
I know the first name that's going to pop up there. Think about it. Female name. Mm.
Natalie. What was Natalie?
Yeah, that was one that was mentioned yesterday.
Yeah. So we have one female name.
Crazy.
What name's
gonna
pop
up? Three Natalies, and they're all great.
Yeah, Natalie's a my guy daughter. What's wrong with Natalie?
You know, the reason I didn't chime in on this yesterday is because some of the names that early on in my life that I just would never, ever deal with, they've kind of, later in life, I found other names that were nice under those.
So. Oh, I see. So you didn't hold a grudge. Yeah, you left your mind open to it.
Yeah. All right, so
Steve, when I think of you, I think open-minded.
Well, thank you.
Because his name's Steve?
Yeah, exactly.
The name that I think we'll probably see in the text line is Hillary.
You're right. But don't, listeners.
I'm not giving people ideas.
Listeners, come here. Let me talk to you for a second. Don't just go for the easy route.
Yeah.
Don't just try to make somebody brought this up yesterday. They go, you bash Trump all the time. So you want Hillary as president? Not one time. I defy you to find one time since Election Day where I've said, oh, my God, we'd be so better off with Hillary. I have never said it, ever. Not a single time. This is not about Hillary Clinton. This is about how bad Donald Trump is. Yeah. And for people that go, 47 million people voted for Donald Trump. There were two choices. Two choices. When you have two choices, people show up to vote. They're going to pick one or the other. There are now two out of three people in this country, according to the latest Gallup poll, who think Trump is a massive failure. And you know what? They're right.
You know what, Steve? He won the election. He won. Ask him.
Yeah.
He won. He'll bring it up again.
And over.
And it'll come up today.
Again, inexplicably last night, though I refuse to spend a whole lot of time trying to analyze the damaged mind of our president, he retweeted a right-wing nut job who, and this is hours after he allegedly found some sense and actually criticized white supremacists and the KKK and the Nazis. Within hours, he retweeted a white supremacist because this white supremacist decided to send out a tweet slamming the media coverage of the president. So people are now wringing their hands on the news networks going, what could the strategy here be? Let me explain something to you. He has no strategy. Donald Trump wakes up in the morning, he falls out of bed, he puts 4.5 cans of hairspray in his hair, and he goes on about his day. He doesn't think about the consequences of his actions. He just opens his mouth and stuff falls out. Or he starts punching on his phone and tweets go out. There is no strategy. There is no explanation on why you would retweet the guy that started the Seth Rich controversy, that cranked up the Pizzagate mess, that led to a guy showing up with a gun in a pizza parlor for just a businessman in Maryland. There is no way you would retweet that as president of the United States unless you were either complicit or really, really dumb. And I'm not sure it's not the latter. So if anybody thinks you're disrespecting the office of the president, no. I disrespect the president, the person in the office, the man in the office. And every day he becomes less presidential and less worthy of the privilege of being in that position. Because here's the thing. When horrible things happen, you have an unbelievable privilege to be able to be the person 300 million people look to and say, what will this individual say?
It's the actual name of what you're doing, the president. You're presiding over all of us.
And he blew it.
Yeah.
He blew it. Now, here's the flip side of this, too. So let's clear the deck on all of this before we move on to the top six in just a second. The flip side of this is he went out yesterday and he said what he said. So you can't go back again and go, yeah, well, he didn't mean it. Okay, you wanted him to come out and you wanted him to say, I denounce the KKK and Nazis and white supremacists. Okay, he did. So now you need to move on because you know what the bigger story is today? Apparently, North Korea is not going to start World War III today.
Right.
There's been almost no coverage of that.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, it's not going to happen because Kim Jong-un's people have put out a statement that said they're going to keep an eye on what we're doing, but there won't be a missile launch today.
Right.
Now, the idea that we can trust that there won't be a missile launch from these people, who knows?
That'll be the big story as well. So,
all right,
we'll
it's coming
delve
up
into that, too.
10 minutes.
Yes.
And finally, here's the rest of this. Last night at Durham, North Carolina, a bunch of protesters in lockstep with the folks in Charlottesville held a protest screaming and chanting and ranting about not tolerating Nazis and white supremacists, and it got out of hand, and they tore down a Confederate statue in the at the Durham County Courthouse. Mm-hmm. That's not okay.
No.
There's a political process in a nation of laws that has to go. You got to go through it. I don't care if you don't like it. Look how long it took to get the Confederate flag off the Capitol in South Carolina.
Right.
Nikki Haley, when she was governor, finally stood up and said it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you don't like that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of Confederate statues across the South, the fact that you don't agree with those beliefs, and by the way, I don't either. It doesn't matter. You cannot go around destroying public property.
No.
And you blow an opportunity to have the public discussion about why that public property should be removed. So shame on them.
You're right. And then you know what? When that happens, the message gets lost. Everybody has the right to the First Amendment, free speech, the right to assemble. But you do it peacefully and you don't disrupt the public or traffic or public property. Like when people here are trying to take the lights off the Christmas tree or hang things on the L. You can't do that.
No.
Just
it's not your property. It's public property.
Absolutely.
And there's a political process that you have to go through that's a pain in the ass, but you have to go through it.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the Top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
All right, let's go. Item number one, Trump says the KKK, neo-Nazis, and white supremacists are repugnant and racism is evil. A lot of people are screaming, yeah, too late. Okay, then move on. He said it, move on. We have other things to discuss other than, you know, this is not news that he's a disappointment. So there's no need to be discussing this ad nauseum. His approval rate is at an all-time low. Meanwhile, protests outside the Trump Tower where he returned last night for the first time in 7 months were of a very large and somewhat frightening level as local authorities attempted to control the crowds and at one point had to call for backup because the crowds grew larger and larger and protesting Trump's homecoming. If you're wondering what that might be like, just picture you're coming home after a vacation and there's 12,000 people in your driveway chanting, don't come home, leave, you're not welcome
right.
here, things like that.
Right.
But Trump's Gallup poll now is at 34% approval, which is 2 out of every 3 people polled said, yeah, he's not the guy.
Yeah.
The most important story of the day is this. General Mattis says if North Korea fires a U.S. At the U.S. in any way, shape or form, including our territories, it could escalate into war. That came hours before the North Korean government said, OK, we're keeping an eye on it,
mm-hmm.
keeping an eye on it, but we're not going to do anything right now. Now, again, we're trusting the people who flew in Dennis Rodman for a weekend.
Right.
We're trusting the people who are run by Kim Jong-un who have one light bulb.
But there's still a part of me that thinks he did this just to continue his, you know, I'm here. Here I am, pounding
no,
on my chest.
To be noticed.
I really don't think he would
wants
do
to
it.
Be noticed. I don't think he has the technology.
I agree.
And I say that because I read stuff from atomic scientists. I didn't spend a lot of time in atomic and nuclear science. I know that shocks most of you. But renowned scientists who have say the science, there's no way the science could exist where he could launch a rocket, have it go out of our lower atmosphere into the upper atmosphere, return, and safely hit a target. We don't want to roll that dice,
no.
But I prefer to believe the scientists than Kim Jong Bad Hair Cartoon.
Agreed.
All right. United Center had to be closed last night after a fight caused a public safety issue during a high school basketball tournament. The fight began inside, spilled outside. A large number of CPD officers came in to break it up. The crowd reached a maximum of 10,000 fans. It was Orr Academy High School and Curie Metropolitan High School were mm-hmm. scheduled to play the championship game. The two schools are crosstown rivals. We don't know what started the fight. We don't know if there are any injuries?
No, there were no major injuries. This is unfortunate. This is the Safe Summer Basketball League tournament, Steve. And remember last year, the same thing happened there. Teenagers started fighting inside, then it spilled out in the parking lot. Last night, the building had to be evacuated, and they actually canceled the tournament. Police did take several people into custody, but no serious injuries, and there could be charges.
This fight started in the crowd or on the court?
This started in the crowd.
This is why we can't have nice things. Can't come to a basketball game and just watch the game.
The Safe Summer Basketball League.
Mm.
This happened last year, too.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Going to need a new title.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
I would just say it's kind of a tradition at this point. Have a good...
The fight?
Well, it's been going on for...
Can't have it.
No, you can't have it, can't but have it, it's a borderline tradition.
What's not a tradition is grabbing Taylor Swift in awkward areas. Yesterday, the court came back with their verdict and ruled against the disc jockey who allegedly groped Taylor Swift in a photo op, but also ruled against her to some extent because they awarded her only $1 in damages. After nearly 4 hours of deliberation, a jury ruled in favor of Taylor Swift. The jury, comprised of 6 women and 2 men, found that the singer's mother, Andrea Swift, was not liable for torturous interference in the trial as well. The disc jockey had sued Taylor Swift for losing his job as well. And the radio promotions director for the station, a guy named Frank Bell, accusing them of interfering with his $150,000 a year contract as a local morning radio disc jockey in Denver, and pressured his employee, KYGO, to fire him, which in fact he was fired. I don't believe he's been rehired.
No.
So maybe you can work with Eric. Is there still an opening over there?
There you go. That could work.
Eric was from Denver, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I think so.
I think it's possible.
I'm just saying there's an opening. I'm not throwing Eric into the middle.
No.
I wouldn't rule it out, though. Right?
Well, who knows?
Eric and David?
Yeah, who knows? Urine test revealed hydrocodone and hydromorphone, two opioid pain medications. Alprazolam, I believe is the pronunciation, prescribed for anxiety and panic disorders. Zolpidem, a sedative prescribed for insomnia. And metabolites of alprazolam and of THC, the active ingredient in marijuana. Who had all these in his system? Tiger Woods. Last week, Woods entered a DUI first offender program, according to a representative for the state attorney in Palm Beach County. The program typically calls for a defendant to plead guilty to a lesser charge of reckless driving. No plea was entered. His arraignment is October 25th. He's likely to be sentenced to a mandatory rehab program at this point because clearly with all of those drugs as a cocktail, a mix in his system, the young man, well, he's not so young anymore, he's 40, mm-hmm. He's got some issues. And he needs to take care of them because that's headed down the Prince Highway.
Oh, big time. Big time.
And we got Paul.
He's getting help, though.
Yeah, well, it's important, right? Yeah. And the more he talks about it, the more he's likely to get the help. And then Paul Coit came to mind because we're going to have to get him on to discuss this, amongst other things. And when is the anniversary of the Diana death?
The 30th, I believe. Is August it? 30th okay. or 31st.
Several stories out of London. Starting in late August, one of London's largest and noisiest national symbols will go silent. No more bongs from Big Ben. Mm. Big
Ouch.
Ben will be bongless.
It was the 31st, by the way.
31st, thank you. Big Ben, which is rung on the hour for, any idea? 157 years.
Is there somebody ringing the Big Ben, or is it just, is that an automated situation?
Well, back in the old days, there was no automation. There was a guy named Clyde.
Clyde was the guy?
With a rope. Ben? With a rope where you're just kind of pulling on it.
Right.
Didn't he also have a humpback? Even?
No, that's a different part.
It's Notre Dame. Wrong bell tower.
Yeah, wrong country. Big Ben will still chime on New Year's Eve, Remembrance Sunday, honoring veterans and special occasions in the UK. But its final regular hourly sound will be August 21st. Scaffolding already erected around the clock tower. Repairs have begun. That is your Top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. And the big story is next.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Allstate believes good starts young and works towards inspiring the next generation of leaders to reach their full potential and make the world a better place through service. In the spirit of that, you can help us recognize a kid that goes above and beyond every week when we do Kid of the Week, which we're going to do right now. Oh, by the way, in an effort to not upset my fellow Swifties, you know, I'm a big Taylor Swift fan, and I have the Taylor Swift fan club. We meet in my tree fort. Taylor Swift apparently only asked for $1.
Right.
So that wasn't a jury decision. They gave her the maximum
of what she asked.
Of what she asked for. So it wasn't about the money, it was about the groping.
It was, that's true.
You with your words like knives and swords and weapons that you use against me, you knocked
me
up.
By the way, you know your mic's on.
Am I on the radio? This is Steve Cochran.
Nominate a kid for the Allstate Kid of the Week that you know could be featured here on the Cochran Show. Poor kid's on the phone right
Our
now.
Kid just hung
Who's
up.
The weird guy singing?
The kid's going, I don't want to be on the show.
With your voice like nails on
All
a chalkboard.
Right. That's enough out of you, mister. I got an Amazon gift card and a Lumel 90s pizza for you. Go to WGNRadio.com/contest and submit an entry for a kid between 9 and 18 that you think ought to be the All-State Kid of the Week. And then tune in every Tuesday and hear great kids like, how about this guy, Zach Stack? Good morning,
yeah.
Zach.
Woof. Good morning.
I love your name.
Thanks.
And by the way, I'm sorry about Mr. Carmen singing. I'm sorry if that creeped you out.
It's fine.
You liked it, Zach. Admit it. It's okay.
Yeah, I liked it.
Well, it's nice of you to say, Zach, even if it's not true. All right, so you appeared in front of the Orland Park Village Board. Why were you doing that?
So my mission is I'm appearing on July 5th in front of the Village Board, and I've brought to their attention my idea of building a baseball field for people with physical or mental impairments, such as being in a wheelchair, ambulating with crutches, or being part of the autism spectrum.
How about that? How about that?
It's incredible.
By the way, how old are you?
I am 15. I'm going to be a sophomore at Marist High School.
Zach was brought to our attention. Pat Gura, Village Trustee, longtime Orland Park Village Trustee, who we're working with in connection with our remote on Friday, sent us an email and said, you have to meet this kid, Zach Stack. He is unbelievable. They were so impressed by you.
Thank you.
Now, Zach, you put a lot of hours into this, raising money and stuff. When you go to people, when you go to grown-ups and you say, I need money for this, did they take you seriously?
Yes, they've taken me very seriously. The public's support emotionally and giving money has been great, and it's been very awesome.
How about that? It says something about the people of Orland Park, too. Of course,
absolutely.
It also says something about the Zach Stack reputation.
Mm-hmm.
The Stack Man.
The Stack Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zach, how are you raising money to do this?
Right now, we are on GoFundMe, and our campaign title is Build Baseball for All Field with the number 4.
Okay.
And currently, we are applying for our nonprofit status, our 501c3, before we start applying for grants as well as going to other foundations.
Getting a 501c is not easy. That's a lot of hoops you have to jump
through. Is a lot of paperwork.
Yeah, but good for you for your dedication. Your dedication, your hard work means that you're closer than ever to reality. So where are we on this?
So right now we are probably about $1,500 in, and we are basically applying for our 501c3 before we start really bringing in a good portion of our goal.
What do you figure you need? What's the budget?
So we figure we need around $500,000, which will include a baseball field, which is specially surfaced, as well as handicap accessible bathrooms.
Well, here's the thing then, Zach Stack. We're going to have to stay in touch with you because we're going to, once you get 501c status and this pushes forward, then we can be your mouthpiece and let people know how they donate.
That'd be awesome.
And here's the other thing, Zach Stack. Zach Stack, we're going to need, and the reason I keep calling you Zach Stack because it's fun to say your name. We're going to need you to have a website that you can safely donate online because people want the convenience, and I don't want you to miss out on a dollar here.
Yes.
All right. So
we are also in the process of making our own website.
Right.
Actually, a person who owns actually a technology firm has actually offered to build us a website.
There you go.
That's great.
Perfect. There you go. Perfect. All right. So you're going to get all that together, and then we're going to reconvene, Zach Stack, and we're going to push this. Because who do we like? We like Zach Stack.
We love Zach.
You got a nickname, Zach Stack?
It's pretty much Zach Stack.
If your name's Zach Stack, you don't need a nickname.
No.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah. The Stack Man, Zach Meister, none of those? Nah, Zach Stack's better.
Nah.
Yeah.
Z-Money.
Z-Money's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You're building dollars. That's what you do.
How about Z-Gimme Money?
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Zach Stack, you're an impressive young man. And what are we going to give him? How about Lou Malnati's Pizza?
And a gift card, too.
Amazon gift card. How about both of those?
Yeah.
And then,
Thank you.
And then what are you doing Friday? Why don't you come over to Silver Lake?
Yeah, well, I'll come over.
Come over and we'll put you on again.
Yeah, cool.
It's awesome.
I feel like a show business blow off a little bit to you guys.
I'll see you there.
Hey, he's got to check with his people.
Well, at 15, he's also got to check with his transportation.
Right.
No, Zach, we'd love to have you on again on Friday to talk about it.
That'd be awesome. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Thanks for being a great kid.
Thanks,
hold on.
Zach.
Oops. Well, they cut him off, but you heard him say thanks.
He's awesome. Pat, our friends in Orland Park said, you've got to meet this kid.
Well,
he came with not only a vision, plans, drawings, outline, ready to start the GoFundMe page. I hope he does.
That's the thing. This is not just a little kid that goes in and goes, hey, wouldn't it be cool if,
right,
with no idea of how to get it done. He did the homework.
And he went before the village board at 15.
Yeah.
Adults won't even do that.
No, adults just go in and complain.
Right.
and goes, fix this. Hey, can you fix this? We elected you. Sex Tech's got a plan.
Yeah, he does.
All right, 6:53 now, and Mark Carman's here. I haven't checked the text line. Are we getting some names coming in?
We are, Steve.
All right, so, again, Mark on the beat on the weekend, the sports show that he hosts on Saturdays and Sundays. What time is that show usually?
4 to 7 on Saturdays, 3 to 6 on Sundays.
Okay. And you brought up that Mitch Trubisky should be Mitchell Trubisky because you can't trust a Mitch. And that kicked into yesterday's text question of the day, which we've extended into today, which is names you just don't like, names you can't trust. No real reason why. Like, I'll give you a perfect example of why this makes it, you know, for an interesting thing to throw out there. You would think one of the most negative names for me would be Don or Donald.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, no, my favorite uncle was Donnie.
But you mentioned some names yesterday that have a little bit of a negative connotation.
Well, it's another perfect example. Here are a couple of names I don't like for no particular reason.
No, no.
Right? Sam, Randy, Kevin, and Tom. But all of those have counterpoints which make them acceptable names to me.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's it for Sam?
Uncle
why Sam.
Uncle Sam.
Panyatovich?
Oh, yeah, Panyatovich.
Sure, there you go. For a girl.
What do you mean, why Sam? Sam Zell.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Well, he almost destroyed this place.
But usually it's when you're growing up that you run into
it. I was still growing up.
We were.
Right. Did you know a bully Sam or something?
Yeah,
really
Zell.
Yeah, Sam Zell.
Okay.
Yeah.
He kind of made it rough for, I would say, all of us.
Yeah.
I go out on a limb.
Well, he's a genius, obviously.
Yeah.
See, I have an issue with Kevin, too. And I had a Kevin growing up in first grade who ate paste. And ever since then, the name Kevin just drives me crazy.
But then you got Powell and Richter.
Kevin Powell.
Yeah, yeah, and I love
great
both of
guys.
Them.
Yeah, they're great guys.
They kind of balances it out.
Well, and Randy, one of my first mentors in the business, was a guy named Randy Oatmeal. Great guy.
Randy's Meat Market in Orland Park.
Well, there's that, certainly. and who am I missing? Oh, Tom. There's lots of great Toms.
Tom Peterson. He hired me.
Yeah, yeah. And they're not all great, though. That's true, too.
Yeah.
It's a good name for a quarterback. Tom Brady. Solid.
Yeah, solid.
So Mitchell.
I have a quarterback question for you.
So hold on a second. Let me remind people. 312-981-7200. Okay. Names that just drive you nuts. I don't need to know why. I just need to know. I don't like this name. I don't like that name.
So you like Mitchell, but you don't like Mitch. That's how this whole thing started, right?
Well, it's not even a liking thing. It's about
trusting.
Being the quarterback. You got to have a presence. Mitchell is a guy that, you know, he shows up, he gets it done. Mitch could get drunk and might miss, a practice or two. John Manziel would have made it in the NFL. Johnny Manziel is a total clown. We need some solidness.
All right. So here's my question: we had Jay Cutler.
Right.
What if he was Jason Cutler?
Better chance.
You think so?
Well, he was.
But I don't want to make it about just football because it'll eliminate, all the rest of the people in the world. Right. Texas 312-981-7200 is the number. Erica Harold, somebody you should know if you're involved in Republican politics in the state. You may well know her already. But she's former Miss Illinois, Miss USA, an accomplished attorney and extremely bright. Mm-hmm. And somebody that seems to have a prominent political future. We'll talk to her in a little bit. And somebody that has a prominent political present. That would be Sarah Feigenholz to be on after 7:30. One more thing about Mark Carman filling in for Dave Ennett. Did you realize what a good guy he is?
Carman?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. We have the exact same birthday.
But did you know that he's running a flop house where just anybody can come and stay with him?
That I did. I just found that out today, and that's a little surprising to me.
Yeah, because
people need a home, Steve.
In Houston, you had...
He's like the YMCA.
Yeah. In Houston, he had somebody named
Jimbo.
Knuckles living with him or something?
Well, I met Jimbo via Craigslist, and we became great friends, and Jimbo...
And by the way, if you can meet someone and take them into your home by way of Craigslist, always a good call.
I would not advocate that, but...
Jimbo actually took me into his home. It's where I learned to be comfortable with randos via Jim. We bonded, Steve. I had my own room.
Randos? What is randos?
A random individual that you've never met before.
Oh, randos.
I didn't know that.
Come on.
I'd never heard the term. And then you also said that when you came here, you were working at a hostel?
Yes, when I left Yahoo Sports Radio coming back to Chicago, I had no general plans of staying in radio. I thought my career was over. And,
still could be.
Right, of course, any minute these things can happen. But so I was working in the hostel industry.
use it.
Welcoming people from various countries and whatnot, and we had overflow at the hostel. So I took that as an opportunity to...
That was a Stones album, wasn't it? Overflow at the hostel?
Yeah.
In an overflow situation, I said, I have a wonderful couch. And Nina said she would be willing to spend a night or two or a month, and she did. And
on the couch?
On the couch.
Okay.
And Nina paid for one or two nights and then never paid again and then just ghosted on me. That's what happened.
Yes. And by the way, the reason Nina was an easy yes for you was what?
Nina was very attractive, Steve. Uh-huh.
You know, we have sanctuary cities. Carmen is like a sanctuary guy.
That's a great point. He's sanctuary Carmen.
Yeah.
The worst part about that story, Steve, is that I thought that I was really onto something here. And you know, I'm like, oh, my God, Nina's going to stay at my place. And we're going for a walk, like, right after she said she was going to stay. We're going for a walk. She's like, I got to tell you, I don't date men. So I knew before it ever happened, but I had to be a good guy. I can't say no at that point, right?
Well, no, she's in your apartment at that point.
Well, no, she hadn't even, this was like the walk from the hostel to get like a coffee after she had committed to, or I had committed.
When she said, I don't date men, couldn't you look at her and go, well, you have so much in common. Neither do I. So, you know, break the ice that way.
Yeah.
That would have been a good one. But Nina was a professional massage therapist. So I did get a massage out of the deal. Not much rent, but there was like, I think I got one massage.
Okay, and can we be honest? I mean, listen, this is talk radio.
Well, I think we're being pretty honest right now.
You thought there was a nookie future in it when you said
yes, I thought there was certainly was a chance, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. You saw future nookie.
Well, you never know what happens.
Another Stones
Steve.
Album.
Well, what could go wrong when you're taking people off Craigslist and from hostels?
Yes,
you know,
yes,
there's
yes.
just no room for
She needed
failure.
Somewhere to stay. She would have been on the street, Andrea.
I know. You're a good guy, Carms.
This
weird but good guy.
This Wright College Foundation situation that you go to in Wisconsin.
The Wright Foundation for Human Potential, Steve.
I think you're going to need more than them. 7 o'clock. We're going to come back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. 720 WGN.
7:12 now. You know, what do we say on the show all the time? We say we need more young people interested in politics to try to change the mess that we're in.
And more women.
And you know my subtle opinion. Democratic leadership is destroying Illinois. Republican leadership is destroying the country. So how about we meet somewhere in the middle? And Erica Harold is here. Erica Harold in studio is quite a life story. And is a hometown girl. You grew up where?
I grew up in Urbana.
And that would have put you very close to the University of Illinois. You ever been there?
Yes. I'm a townie, a graduate of the University of Illinois. Yes. I proudly claim that.
Dallas.
Gotta do it. ILL.
You have I&I all the way.
See? Gotta do it.
There you go.
You have to own that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And as a young woman, you eventually become a lawyer. What drew you to the law?
I wanted to be an advocate to fight for people. I had a personal experience of being bullied when I was in high school. It started out with name calling, escalated to death threats. I ultimately had to leave the high school, and it gave me a sense of what it felt like to be powerless. And it was defining for me because it made me want to be a lawyer and made me want to fight for people.
Now, this was the 90s, I assume, in high school?
It was.
Okay, so we're a lot better now than we used to be about understanding the scourge of bullying and how damaging psychological bullying is, not to mention physical bullying. But in the 90s, did you get blown off when you complained about it?
In the 90s, there was still the mentality of that's just kids being kids.
Yeah, walk it off. Figure it out.
Absolutely. Now people are seeing the links to suicide and the fact that there's an obligation to protect kids.
There's a statistic that came out this week. 12-year-olds. One 12-year-old every 5 days kills himself over bullying. It's a reputable study.
I believe it.
It's one of the most hideous things I've ever heard.
I actually still go into schools and talk to students about my own experience and encourage them to stand up for themselves and to demand to be treated with respect. And I have students who will come up to me and talk to me about the way they're trying to cope with it, whether it's suicide attempts or cutting. But it's a very serious issue, and I want kids to understand that they're not alone and they have people who will fight for them.
It's really important for kids to hear because, you know, I've always said, never forget what it felt like to be 10. or 11 mm-hmm. or 15 or whatever. Because, you know, all of us as parents, and now me as a first-time grandparent, you know, a kid comes home from school and they're telling you about something they really got upset about during the day. It's not a big deal to you because you're a grown-up. You've lived a life. You've been through it. But it's a hugely traumatic part of their day. And you got to put yourself in their shoes and stop whatever you're doing and listen to them.
And it's also worse now, too, I would even venture to say, and you've probably seen in your experiences, too, with cyberbullying, online thing, threats and whatnot. Stay
Never
there.
Been easier to be
they
a coward and
go
bully kids.
Viral, yeah.
Absolutely.
Social media.
And the social media aspect is actually far more damaging for kids than the physical bullying, because there's this sense of if it's online, they think that everyone can see it. And that psychological torment is something that they don't have the ability to escape from. Before, people would settle their grievances with a fight on the schoolyard playground. They would maybe get over it the next day. But with things going viral, those images stay forever. And it's something that's very damaging.
Now, after college, you went to that fly-by-night law school, Harvard?
Yes, I did.
Yes. Intimidating going to Harvard?
It was slightly intimidating because you know you're studying with the best, but I really wanted to be up for the challenge. And so I participated in a moot court competition because I really wanted to challenge myself. I didn't want to leave there feeling like I'd back down from any challenges.
What do you love about the law?
I love the fact that you're able to apply to specific facts and figure out how to make people's lives better in very tangible ways. And a lot of people see the law as something that's mysterious, it's intimidating, it's expensive. And as a lawyer, it's my job to figure out what's the most efficient, cost-effective, painless way of being able to help people achieve resolution.
Now, I don't want to gloss over, there's a pretty cool part of your life that I haven't mentioned, and that's the fact that Miss America 2003...
I was.
When did you do pageants as a teenager?
I did not. I did my first pageant when I was in college for the rather mundane reason of earning money to pay for school.
Me too. Same reason I did
it. It's a path for us all, actually.
Yes, same reason I did it.
Right.
So you became Miss Illinois.
Became Miss Illinois and then represented our state at Miss America.
When you won, were you shocked?
I was surprised because I had not had that lifetime experience and I was up against people who did. But what motivated me is I'd been accepted to Harvard Law School, didn't have the money to pay for it, and decided to enter the pageant that year as my way of earning money to pay for it.
And as your year at Miss America, where it was bullying one of the causes that you used to go around the country and talk about? Because really, that's the thing. If you achieve that kind of success, you've got a great platform for 12 months. You need to use it for good, right?
You have an incredible bully pulpit, and my platform is preventing youth violence and bullying. And I had the ability not only to go into schools, but to talk to community groups, to talk to legislatures, to talk about the importance of passing anti-harassment legislation to try to change the culture and the law.
I don't overstep my boundaries here. You're a fairly impressive person.
Yeah.
Thank you very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that's really going out on a limb.
I mean, wow. Congratulations. Yeah. This is amazing. Continue
yeah,
on, Steve.
We may have to make her adult
you.
Of the week.
I was going
to
say, building on that, exactly right. Building on that, you're together, you're intelligent, you got it all going on. Why do you want to get into politics?
Well, we're not going to announce that quite
okay.
yet. Yeah, hold on. This could be the big broadcast tease.
Okay, sorry.
You have an announcement to make.
I do have an announcement.
And then Andrea will ask you a question about it that she hasn't thought of yet.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, that
Stand
sounds great.
Stand by 1 second. You know who else is on the phone? Pat Brady.
Oh.
Pat Brady is calling from the road. We'll get to Pat in a second, too. It's 7:18. State Rep. Sarah Feigenholtz representing the Democrats after 7:30. And is she in the studio? Is she coming in? She is. Okay. And always nice to see Sarah. Erica Harold is here, somebody you should know, and for no small reason. You have an announcement to make.
I do.
And that announcement is?
I'm running for Attorney General. Just cut right to the chase.
Right, and congratulations. I mean, I salute it.
The state of Illinois.
Yes.
Well, I should clarify.
Right. Yes.
I should clarify.
Yeah, but
we don't want to break any more news right. than necessary.
And pardon the look on my face because you have so much positive going on in your life. The fact that you're going to – I'm conflicted because – I want great people, especially great young people and great young women involved in the process because we need that. And you certainly appear to fit all of those and check all those boxes. But do you know what you're getting into, I guess would be my question.
I do know what I'm getting into. I've looked around at the dysfunction in our state, probably like so many people, and wanted to know, is there anything to do to fix it? And I think with my legal background and passion to be an advocate, that the Attorney General role is a place I can make a difference.
Well, you know, a sitting ovation.
Absolutely.
Way to go, way to go, way to go.
It's the highest honor in the show, a sitting ovation.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
All right. It is politics.
And yes, it is.
Illinois politics, which
Indeed.
Can get a little dirty.
Indeed. But
And personal.
I think what we need to do, though, is stay focused on issues and the reason why this race is important. I'm running because I believe that our state deserves an attorney general who will be independent, who will be unafraid to hold both parties accountable. And that's important, not just one party, but both parties accountable, and who will be willing to go after public corruption. Because,
in other words, the definition of the job, right?
Absolutely the definition of the
yeah,
job.
Yeah.
And I'm running because our current attorney general promised when she ran 15 years ago that she would be proactive in going after public corruption, and she has not done that. And I would be an attorney general who would.
And by the way, Lisa Madigan is always welcome to come in here as well. But I don't do the two people at the same time yelling at each other. So you'll come back. She'll come back at some point. Let me get Pat Brady in here as well, because I know you know Mr. Brady, and he's calling from the road. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Congratulations, Erica.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning.
Where are you, Pat?
I am in Omaha, Nebraska.
And Pat is headed west. He's going to get one of his daughters back into college in San Diego and doing a dad thing. What did you want to ask, Erica?
Hey, well, first, just a little comment. Your opening statement, you hit the nail on the head, I think, for a lot of people when you said that we feel powerless under the current system, the way we have it set up here with the speaker and the attorney general. But you were ahead on two issues that I see right now. You're talking about bullying. You're way ahead on that. You were talking about it before anybody was. But another thing I know you were big on, and I know some people deserve to be in prison and stay there forever, but you were big in prison reform and rehabilitation of people that are actually in penitentiaries. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. For the past 10 years, I've served on the National Board of Directors of an organization that does prison reform and advocates for criminal justice reform. And that's important because if we're going to address the recidivism rates in our society, we have to give people meaningful ways to be able to put their life back together. We have to hold people accountable, but once they have served their time, there have to be meaningful ways in which they can acquire the job skills and educational background to be able to support their families. It's really something that makes common sense. And in a state like Illinois, when we cannot afford to keep wasting money on solutions that don't work, this is a prime time for us to be able to do that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm seeking this office, because I think my background uniquely situates me to be a leader on that issue.
The amount of money it takes to run for a statewide office is insane.
It's a lot of money.
It's ridiculous. I assume you're doing well as a lawyer, but I also assume you'd like to not go broke doing this. Are you prepared to go out and do the political thing where you have to ask for the donations and all of that?
I'm prepared to work really hard to make the case why I would be the best advocate for our state and the best attorney general, and I hope that people across the state will support me. When you look at the dysfunction in our state, people have just received a 32% tax hike with no structural reform. I hope they feel the way I do and decide it's time to stand up and do something, and I'm willing to be in the arena. I hope they're willing to be there with me.
What's the greatest legal threat to Illinois, do you think? And again, this is just speculative because, you know, we're talking about down the road if you get this job. Is it internal corruption or is it an outside force like cybercrime?
I think our biggest threat is public corruption because it undermines people's respect for the rule of law. When people no longer respect the rule of law and think that there are two sets of rules, one for the politicians, one for everybody else, it undermines people's respect. And that's a prime problem.
How much can the attorney general step in when it comes to issues like term limits, education funding? You mentioned taxes as well. I mean, everybody, I'm sure, nobody wants to pay more taxes. But how can someone turn to the attorney general and say, hey, you need to step in. What can you legally do to help?
There are a variety of ways. It depends on the specific issue, but you do have the ability to work with the legislature if you think there are specific reforms that would benefit our state. So if the attorney general supported term limits, the attorney general could work with the legislature to get legislation like that implemented. I support term limits because right now the speaker has the longest serving speaker in U.S. history, and our attorney general is the longest serving attorney general in the country. And that concentration of power has not served the people's interests well.
Let's talk about the tiny elephant hiding in the corner of the room. The speaker has been around since 1971. He's been speaker of all but 2 years since, what is it, Pat, 1983, I think.
2 years in the mid-90s, Ed Speaker Daniels, yeah.
Yeah, so he also runs...
Let's put it this way, Steve. He went down there when you and I were in second grade.
That's exactly right. He also runs the Democratic Party in the state, and he doesn't like to lose. Do you see him as the biggest impediment to winning the race?
I think he's certainly going to be a big obstacle, but I'm not afraid to take on hard challenges because we have to be willing to do that if we want to get to the root of the problem. And he's someone who has stopped term limits. He's someone who has blocked a more nonpartisan way of redistricting and fair maps. And so I'm willing to take on that as well because we have to if we're going to get to root issues.
And the thing that I don't want to be the old guy sitting on a porch with my lemonade here, but the thing that continues to drive me nuts is what you're talking about are common sense solutions. That's what we talk about here, common sense solutions that are good for the people of Illinois, not for the Democrats of Illinois or for the Republicans of Illinois. The Attorney General's office needs to represent all the people of Illinois.
Absolutely.
The same way the Speaker's office should. I understand the Speaker has to protect their party, and the Speaker gets to control the legislative agenda, but not to the extent that this Speaker has, and also to be responsible enough to come on here and ask to answer tough questions and to do interviews and, for God's sakes, to have a phone in his office where he could hear from his constituents, which, by the way, Mike Madigan doesn't.
Erica, what do you say to those people who say Lisa Madigan has done a good job to distance herself from her father, staying away from politics, and has the experience having been the longest-serving AG in the country?
The role of the Attorney General is to be a watchdog, and so the distancing is actually letting the people down because it's not enough just to focus on consumer protection issues. You have to focus on all of the issues important to this office. That includes investigating your father if he's the Speaker and there are allegations of misconduct, and she hasn't done that.
More proactive than political then, right? Because so many of these offices, including the Comptroller's office, have become very political.
The Attorney General's office is one that's supposed to represent all the people's interests. And when you see misconduct, regardless of which party, you have to be unafraid to pursue it.
Last thoughts, Pat?
No, I'm very excited about this. I can't, Eric, you just really nailed it for me in talking about the powerless again. I'm sorry to repeat that, but just because all you talked about, that the things that Lisa Madigan ran on that she was going to do, she didn't, and she's really been a very ineffective Attorney General, and I hope when you get there, you go after Democrats and Republicans, and we need an independent Attorney General. We haven't had one in a long, long time.
It's Pat Brady live from the road, and Erica Harold here. If people want to follow you, stay in touch with you, support you, what do you recommend?
They can go to ericaharold.com, and that's Erica with a K.
E-R-I-K-A, and Harold, H-A-R-O-L-D.
Yes, indeed.
Nice to meet you.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you for jumping in and doing this. Certainly thank you for announcing it here, but thank you for jumping in and doing this. Regardless of where this road leads, I know it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be an exciting ride.
There you go. We will talk again, obviously.
Thank you.
Pat, drive safe.
Thanks, guys. Congratulations, Erica.
Thank you so much.
Safely, if grammar matters. God, I got a Harvard grad in here.
I'm not judging you.
You were a little, and you should have.
We
7:31,
okay.
And we're back after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
7:42, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. My friend Sarah Feigenholz is here. Of course, we always do this whenever you're on the show. We always see if we're still friends after the interview is over.
You guys are friends.
You look fabulous. How are you? Well, lean into the microphone. It's not like it's your first day. Come on now. Pay attention. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. It's always so exciting to get invited on your show. I get to...
First off, I have never turned you down for anything that you've wanted to do on the radio. Not a single time. Why?
Should be more men in the world like you.
Why? There's a couple of reasons. One, because you're great. Two, because I like you personally. And three, even though for some reason you continue to support Mike Madigan, you, I think, are one of the bright shining lights of Springfield and the quagmire that it is and one of the hopes that we do have. I don't want to put all the pressure on
you. That is so sweet.
Yeah. Well, that's who I am. So let's get after it. The governor's a mandatory veto. When are you guys going to vote on it?
Well, we're going back to Springfield tomorrow.
Okay.
And we're going to be addressing Senate Bill 1 and education funding. We're going to be talking about the governor's veto, a mandatory veto.
Have you seen it?
Have I seen?
The AV, the mandatory veto?
I have.
So you've seen it. You've been able to look at it. What do you like?
Well,
what do you not like?
I'd like to talk about education holistically. I think that, when you get in the weeds on this stuff, Steve, the public gets very confused.
Yeah, and annoyed.
annoyed.
Yeah.
Like, fix the problem. What are you doing?
Right.
And I just want to say, for people who are concerned about their property taxes, not just statewide, but especially in Chicago, that a four-year effort culminated in Senate Bill 1. It was a bipartisan bill. It was Republicans and Democrats working together to come up with a solution. And it's been a decades-old problem, because we can never talk about education funding without talking about property taxes. They are inextricably linked, which is not the best way, most people would think, to fund education.
No.
So for the first time in my experience, in my lifetime, Senate Bill 1 begins to delink them and actually fund education as it should be funded, equitably, driving more money to poor districts. It's become a very, very divisive issue, only because, can I say it? The governor has driven this into a very, very political issue, I believe, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I will always give Bruce Rauner the benefit of the doubt when he does the right thing. And honestly, I just don't think that he has the best interests of children in this state at heart, or the property tax. People are paying property taxes, especially in the city of Chicago, where I pay for, in my property, in my taxes, I pay for Chicago education costs and pension costs, mm-hmm. and I pay for suburban and downstate schools. Right. This finally fixes this problem. He, his own spokesperson, Beth Purvis, his education czarina, said that the governor is happy with 90% of this bill. Mm-hmm. It's the other 10% he doesn't like. Now, who in the General Assembly, you have been around me for how many years?
A long time.
Well, we don't want to talk about
that.
Yeah. So,
especially since we're both now in our late 20s.
Exactly. So did we get, we're both adopted.
Mm-hmm. Right?
We slogged through a decade of legislation where I cried in the studio about not having enough votes. Did I get 100? Did we get 100%
Nobody
of what
100%.
We wanted?
Nobody
okay,
gets 100%.
Okay. So I just want the public to understand how monumental Senate Bill 1 is, how it is really a change in direction. It's really kind of
it's not a perfect bill, but it's a good right. bill with the potential to grow in the proper direction, which we haven't had in a long time. Is that a fair summary?
That is very fair. And I'm really disappointed in the governor, in him trying to kill this bill. He's sort of new on the scene, so I'm not sure he has an appreciation for how difficult it's been to actually get to Senate Bill 1. And the work that Andy Menar and Will Davis and have put into this bill, and Bob Pritchard, who is a big education person, who's leaving the General Assembly because he just probably can't. You know, there's a lot of members that are.
At some point, you have to go, well, I have a life, and this is not what.
I just think that it's beyond that. I think that this, pumping on the brakes and creating a very divisive environment is something that a lot of members don't appreciate, and they want to leave.
Yes.
You talk divisive too. I think that's a really good point. I mean, how many states? I know there's arguments. There's a lot of partisanship. Of course, it's politics, but. What kind of a message does it send when we didn't have a budget for 2 years, almost three, and then veto, a mandatory veto, override? I mean, that just shows a complete lack of the inability to get along or to come to some sort of an agreement on something like this, where I don't want to pay more in taxes. You and I are both city residents. I don't want to pay more in any sort of tax.
Well, I want to pay for Chicago Public Schools. I believe in public education, and I spend a great deal of time in my schools. I was on the phone. I stay in touch with my principals and ask them what they need. I go visit the parents. It's very, very important to me to have good schools in my legislative district, because it will bring a quality families into my district. I mean, I have schools that are turnaround schools that were really bad and now are unbelievable. And it has a lot to do with the spirit of the teachers, the spirit of the principals, and the local school councils. And my job is to cultivate that and grow it. Right now, I was on the way down here. We're doing a school supply drive for my schools so that they can deal with some of the the loss they have in mm-hmm. their budgets this year. Mm-hmm. So anyone who wants to contribute a case of copy paper, drop it off at my office on Sheffield.
Who's going to move it?
I'll move it. I don't care.
No, you're not. Dead.
Yeah,
please.
I will.
That's
I'll
what
do
your
it.
Chief of staff
but,
is for.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a lot of paper. Our schools go through about 30 cases of paper a month.
No, no doubt.
And this is our school's way of defraying costs. So my point is I was so amazed and thrilled when Senate Bill 1 passed and so happy to put my vote on it. And I'm sure that had there not been threats to other legislators on the other side of the aisle that the governor was going to come in and even if their districts were going to really seriously benefit. Central Illinois, where the tax base is not great, where we really fund schools in the poor districts, I don't know how the lawmakers in those districts cannot vote for the override. I just don't know.
Well, their argument would be, I don't know how Madigan could be supported with everything he brings down the pike as well. But before we get to any of that, the governor was on a couple of days ago. And I asked him specifically, he was prepared to lose re-election over this. I asked him about the 90% question that you brought up. But before we go to the break, and we're already late here, and yes, you have to stay through the break and hang around. You thought I was just going to let you go on and then you'd be able to leave the room. Not so fast, lady. But if we don't fund all of school education with property taxes, what does SB 1 say on how we're going to do it? Or what does it grow to and how we're going to do it?
Well, it actually creates equity. You know, we fund every other school district through state funds. And this actually takes Chicago and puts it in that same group and funds it. We add money to education. Our Constitution actually demands that we fund education and that's our responsibility, our state constitution.
Okay, but here's my question, and I'm violating my own rule here because I had to go to the break. But if the state funds are going to fund the city schools, but the city is still going to have a local school board manage the schools, if I live downstate, am I right to say I have no control over where my money's going again?
The State Board of Education governs that.
The State Board of Education governs the money coming in, but the city and the mayor's office controls what happens in the schools in the city, correct?
Well, there's a bill sitting on the governor's desk about local school council and, you know, the people taking control of it. That's something that's also being discussed. You know, they are a taxing body. I don't think that Rahm Emanuel wants to raise taxes anymore in the city of Chicago.
Can't pay for what he has now.
Right. So I think that this is the equity and the fairness for our statewide for kids that we have been attempting to achieve. And this is it. This is the golden goose, Senate Bill 1. And why the governor wants to kill it is it eludes me.
Well, I have a theory on that. And I don't agree with the governor's position, by the way, but I have a theory on one way he wants to kill it. And I'd be curious to get your take on it in a second. But first, it's 7:51. Sarah Feigenholz is here. What district do you represent again?
I represent the 12th district along Chicago's lakefront, home of the world champion Chicago Cubs.
Now, here is the thing about the discussion that we're having. I have supported the governor's attempt to try to fix things because the common sense of it makes sense to me. The overall attempt to fix things is because the state's a mess. And he came in with a turnaround agenda of 40 or 45 items, which came down to two or three or four. But at some point, you have to realize that the child across the hall is going to not get along with you and it can out-stubborn you all day. I don't believe Mike Madigan is going to change. I don't believe he's going to move on this at all. And I believe the governor has a responsibility as the governor of the state to step up and take Senate Bill 1 and do what he can with it and move forward. I fully admit I've not read every sentence of Senate Bill 1. I don't understand the nuances completely of it, but I understand the politics of it, and I understand the overall good of it. And I'm completely tired of parents and kids and teachers and administrators stressing out because they can't understand why the people in Springfield can't get their act together to do the most basic things. So that's why I think the governor is making a mistake here, as you pointed out, Kristen McQuarrie pointed out in the Trib, amongst other places. Having said all that, this atmosphere that was created has two stories to it. And Mike Madigan has continued to hide as Speaker of the House. He doesn't address the public. He doesn't address the media. I'm not even saying he's wrong about Senate Bill 1. But this atmosphere he's created, which is a deeply personal conflict between him and the governor, is his fault, too.
So Bruce Rauner is my third Republican governor. This has never happened before.
Illinois, this what?
Mike Madigan has been speaker a long time, and in his defense, I will say
since 1983,
for the last 200 years, mm-hmm. Illinois is 200 years old-ish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's coming up.
There has been a budget every year, no matter who the governor was and no matter who the speaker was. Did you know that?
Well, I do know that, but don't pat me on the head, lady.
I know. And so what's the variable? Remember science class? Steve, what's the variable here?
Well, the variable, let me explain why the variable exists. In my mind, the variable exists because this is the first guy who's been willing to look Mike Madigan in the eye and say, I'm tired of your crap.
But that's all politics.
The people of this, no, it's not. It's not politics in fact, you stand up and say, I want change. Can we agree that the state is broken? Not broke, broken.
You know, when we overrode the governor's veto on the budget with 15 Republican members,
right,
we stepped into clarity for the people of this state and direction and fixing the problem. Before Bruce Rauner became governor, we were on track to paying our bills coming out of a terrible recession, Steve, a terrible recession. We were paying our bills in 45 days. We had passed a pension reform bill that labor hated, but we knew we had to fix it. We cut Medicaid $1.5 billion, mm-hmm. which was a very painful exercise. I did that with two Republicans and another Democrat. So to tell me that Mike Madigan, who is my speaker, mm-hmm. has done nothing is really incorrect. I mean, it's really a lot of hype.
I didn't say he's did nothing. I said he's done everything for him and for his agenda, for the people of the state. Here's what I'd like to see the speaker do. I'd like to see the speaker step up and do something for the greater good of the state, including taking something under consideration to move the ball and make changes. Let me just throw a couple numbers at you as well.
But
$10 million in unpaid bills, it could grow to $47 billion by 2022, $130 billion in unfunded liabilities, and every pension decision that was made all along the way since 1983, with the exception of those 2 years, he has steered, along with the fact that he steered every other bill. I'm not blaming everything on Mike Madigan, but I'm just tired of Democrats in this state saying he's completely blameless.
Well, no, everyone carries the same amount of blame.
No, you know, No, they don't. You don't carry the same amount of blame as he does because you're not the speaker.
The speaker responds to the will of his caucus. We caucus. Mm.
Is that true, or does the caucus respond to the will of the speaker?
I think it's a two-way street. I really do. I think that initiatives that are important to his members are, you know, when I was working on the birth certificate bill, Steve, don't you think there was a little blowback?
Of course there was, for years.
So who do you think helped me get that bill out?
I assume the speaker at some point.
Okay. What about the edge tax credit that passed?
Okay,
this
answer
week?
This for me. Why does the speaker not have a phone in his office where constituents could reach him?
You know, he's old school. I don't know.
No.
I mean, you.
Old school? What is he? Like 1870 old school? It's a phone.
He has a phone in his office.
He doesn't.
He does.
Well, you may have a number. The public doesn't have a number.
A cell phone?
You probably have a number for him. Go on his website.
217-782-6360. That is the
217-782-6360?
Yeah. What do you mean he doesn't have a phone?
There's no way to contact him on his website. There's no way to contact him.
I just gave you the number.
Okay. Well, then...
Do you know what?
Because then in this exchange,
I called AT&T this week. I was looking for somebody at AT&T. I couldn't find their phone number.
That's cute. All right, so nice try at diversion. All right, so here's the situation. Because luckily for both of us, we're out of time. Because I love you. You know I love you. But I just want to hear you say, the Democrats could do a few things better as well. Because you know where I am on this. The Republicans are killing Washington. Donald Trump is a disaster. He is the worst president in our lifetime or any lifetime. That's a huge, huge problem. Yes. But you cannot look me in the eye and tell me with all your belief. I know you. You cannot tell me without lying to my face, which you've never done, that the Democrats can't do their part to fix this and that Mike Madigan couldn't come our way a little bit. And by our way, I mean the state of Illinois' way.
I will always listen to you. I totally agree with you. You are always right. And well, but I have to say that we really do our best, and we and it has become very divisive. It has never been so divisive. I have worked for so long with Patty Bellock. She is a very conservative Republican from Hinsdale, mm-hmm. And a Sox fan.
The problem's not you.
And well, but you know what? Mike Madigan was Speaker when I had a very good working relationship with Republicans. This is, he has not brought toxicity into this, as far as I'm concerned. You know,
your relationship with him is because you're a strong, talented legislator. There is a good portion of your caucus that doesn't have the track record or the thump that you have, that are following like sheep. And the sheep need to be corralled on both sides. Now I'm going to leave you with the positive.
All of our members are leaders. Our House Republican and Democrats all have issues that they're very passionate about.
I don't doubt it, but this ain't Sesame Street. This is big boy and big girl baseball. And the fact of the matter is, there are Republicans and Democrats that are spending way too much time worrying about being elected than they are about worrying about doing the job. I don't care if people get elected or reelected in Springfield. I care about whether or not you do the job you were sent there to do. And that's where the aggravation of the state is coming from. And again, give yourself credit here, because you have a great relationship with Mike Madigan, because you forged a great relationship with
Mike Madigan. I also tried to have a really good relationship with Bruce Rauner.
Okay, I understand that. But I'm saying the rest of the state doesn't have a great relationship with Mike Madigan. And he is a power broker. And he deserves to be a power broker because he's worked hard to be there. Now, use that power for good and not evil, Mr. Speaker, and step up, answer some questions, be a man, and step out. And you don't want to talk to me, talk to anybody. But stop hiding, because that's exactly what he's doing. Because you can't stay in Springfield and not talk to the public and not say you're hiding.
I see the Speaker talking to the public all the time.
Do you?
He's very accessible.
Uh-huh.
I think that this is personal, Steve. I think you want to meet with the Speaker. Is that?
Of course I want to meet with the Speaker.
Can I make that happen?
I absolutely want to meet with the Speaker.
Yeah.
You know what the Speaker said the last time this was brought up? Well, he's not doing himself any favors. You know what, King? I don't do favors. I don't do favors for you. You owe it to the people. I happen to have a microphone that reaches 500,000 people. You ought to want to be in here. The last time he did an interview on this radio station was with Rick Pearson on a Sunday morning, which is probably 6 months ago or a year ago, outside of the time he sat down and talked with Patty Vasquez. So he's off the hook because he does a couple of press conferences? Give me a break. The governor comes in. The governor knows I disagree with him on SB1. The governor comes in. The governor talks. You talk. Every other politician talks. You know why? Because you should. Where's the Speaker?
Where's Waldo?
God, he'd look good in the hat, wouldn't he? He would look good in the hat.
You know, Steve, you know, I'm perplexed. I don't know how to answer it. I don't speak for Mike Madigan. I really don't. He is his own person. I do know that he has tried to work with Bruce Rauner. He has given him many, many, many of the things that he had on his turnaround agenda, from selling the Thompson Center to, you know, tax credits to procurement reform to workers' comp reform. Everything that Bruce Rauner has asked for, Mike Madigan has delivered. Maybe not 100%, because Mike Madigan has to get 60 of his members to agree with some of Bruce Rauner's stuff. And sometimes that doesn't work.
Listen, I'm saying the Republicans and the governor have a lot to fix. I'm also saying so do the Democrats. And for the people of this state, they need to hear that from the Democrats.
Will the House override?
My fingers are crossed. I'm optimistic for the sake of the kids of the city of Chicago and statewide in those poorer districts, and because it's a pivotal seismic bill for how we fund education in the state of Illinois.
You guys okay?
I love Feigenholz. You know that.
I know you do.
You're welcome here anytime.
I know. Whenever you want me, I'll be here.
Thank you for the sweet rolls.
Yeah, go break.
By the way, don't think just because you brought in Ann Sather, you get away with anything. We got to do the news. We're way late. We'll do that next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Kiss me good.
8:17 and 8 time we might play the Mike Madigan game again. So be advised, show number 967. We've invited him on 967 occasions. He's not shown up. But today could be the day. You never know. Got to stay positive.
Hey, you got a phone number now.
We do.
A new one.
Thanks to Representative Feigenholz. But you know what that probably is? And I shouldn't say this because you know how much I like Sarah Feigenholz. But you know when you meet a woman in a club and she'd give you the number to the dry cleaner? So it's probably a number for like the Jewel or something.
The recorded message.
Yeah.
You got this number in error.
Dean is here. Good morning, Dean.
I enjoyed the interview very much.
Thanks. You know Sarah?
I do.
I love Sarah.
I do too.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't know why. When you called that number that she gave you, my phone rang here at my desk, which I don't think is funny.
Pranksters.
Right.
Unbelievable. Helen Mirren's in the news, one of the great women of Hollywood, as far as I'm concerned.
I love her.
You've interviewed her before, right?
I have many times.
And is she fun?
She is fun.
Yeah, that's
she's fun, and she's a little, extremely articulate and. You know, brilliant and talented, but a little saucy.
Yeah.
A little naughty also.
You ever go back and look at the pictures of her when she was coming up in the biz?
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
I'm going to say.
She is sexy at 67 or 8 or whatever she is.
She's 72 years old.
That's what I meant, 72.
And tatted, too.
Oh, yeah. And you go back and look at her through the years. I mean, she's never missed a step.
If you love Helen Mirren, she's the cover girl of Allure magazine.
Me too.
What? I wouldn't pay any money to see you. One of those.
Allure goes out of business. They put Steve on the cover.
Yeah. Dean, I would not, but.
She talks about her younger career, about being a feminist icon. But my favorite part of the whole interview, it's one sentence that stood out and to me encapsulates what the Helen Mirren that I've met is. They asked her, what advice would she give to her younger self?
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I would like you to give Mike Madigan that same question.
Right, if you ever
get to talk to him.
Right.
I think there's a greater chance of getting to Helen Mirren before you get to Mike Madigan. She responded to that question. It would be to say bleep off more often to people.
Wow.
And stop being so bloody polite.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, she might be my favorite Brit right after Paul Coy.
Feisty girl.
Jennifer Hudson was in town. The Taylor Swift disc jockey case is settled, and the Restless Nation can exhale now.
Yeah, man. Got to pay her $1.
And Helen Mirren, as Dean just told you, made the news. But we have other things to discuss as well. I want to get back to our text poll again, our text question of the day. And the text question of the day is, what name just gives you the willies? Right? First name. This kid, Dean, I don't know if we talked about this yesterday. This came out of Mark Harmon's show, The Beat.
Right. The Mitchell
Mitch versus Mitchell controversy. We all started naming names that we just have a problem with.
By the way, it doesn't have
to be rational, even.
Names give you the willies?
If somebody go, I don't like that guy. I don't like that guy because of his name.
Because of the name?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what you're having trouble understanding about this. It's completely rational.
Maybe Mike Madigan's name is Steve.
I have no doubt about that. But for instance, I mentioned that Chaz came up yesterday. Chaz, you know, if you're gonna
for
be
a guy,
for a guy,
yeah,
just like Chaz Ebert.
Yeah, because she's sweet,
sweetheart.
Yeah, so nice. The only female name I think we got yesterday was Natalie,
which is crazy to me because I love Natalie.
Right. Yeah, that name.
Just to me.
That and Ava Braun came up, but the president couldn't condemn that at all.
How about Vicky?
Oh, I love the name Vicky.
Really?
Yeah.
Something with Vicky.
Love
Vicky.
No,
I must have known a bad Vicky.
Must have known a
I've
bad...
never known a... And then that's
that's another Stones album, Bad Vicky.
I've never known a bad Vicky. Dean, you and I know a couple of Vickies. They're great.
Yep.
Is that a big Greek name, Vicky?
A little bit of a Greek name, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hagatha.
British name.
Agatha. Agatha's... That's got wart right on the tip of its nose.
Have you ever been an...
How about wart? Wart's a terrible name.
Oh, God. Yeah. I hate the wart.
Has there ever been an unattractive Morgan?
Morgan Freeman in a cocktail gown. That's fantastic.
Morgan's... I forgot about Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Fairchild.
You can wear a stiletto, too. I don't want to... You know, I know you're talking about names.
Yeah. Very attractive in his own way, Morgan.
But, Dean, you're telling me there's no one in your life where if I said the name, whatever, the first thing that would come to mind is I don't like that guy.
I think so. Not because of their name.
Yeah.
I have plenty of reasons to not like people, but.
You know, here's the thing. Of all the nonsense you bring to this segment, now you're going to get an academic on me?
Oh, I got one. I got one.
How about Dracula?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, we had Damien yesterday.
How about Damien's a good one.
Damien.
How
Damien.
About Val?
Val.
Oh.
For a guy.
Either.
Well, that was my dad's name, so no.
Yeah, okay, then we
no,
can't
but that's
well,
a short version.
Valera
yeah,
was my dad's
no,
name.
No, I'm talking about
well, no,
the
that's
name
a,
Val.
That's very
like
Danish.
Like Valerie?
That's a nickname.
Valerie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was thinking more Val Kilmer.
Okay.
See, I like Val.
Val Kilmer or Val Warner.
He's like a pale.
Oh, Val Warner, yeah.
He used to be on WGN Morning News. I'm not sure
that's
what
right.
she's doing anymore.
How about Lionel?
No, I like Lionel. On the Jeffersons, I liked Lionel.
I just saw Lionel Richie flash across the monitor in the studio.
Dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, well, this segment's taking off like wildfire.
I'm staying with Dracula.
We'll come back and hit a couple of those showbiz stories next. First, here's Mary with the traffic.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard.
Dean's back. Representative Feigenholz is about to leave the studio. Before she goes, though, she's trying to get, amongst other things, school supplies and copy paper for the schools in her district. David Miranda, come here, will you? David is helping out with the show with Mike Jacobson. Hey, grab that mic with Andrea. All right, so David, here's what I want you to do.
What is it?
Because I don't have time to get to Costco. Go upstairs, if we don't have a case of copy paper here, but go upstairs and grab a case of copy paper, bring it down, and give it to these guys as a donation.
There
and for and for the well, Tribune Management folks...
It.
For the Tribune Management folks listening now, I'm good for the $27. So grab it, will you, before they go? Run upstairs and grab some copy paper.
I have a half a box of paper clips in my desk.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Wait. We got a lot of highlighters, too. You need highlighters?
Oh, and staplers, remember? We had about 15 staplers.
40 highlighters and staplers. Grab whatever you can carry from upstairs and bring it down. Okay. So you can't leave, Representative Feigenholz, you can't leave until we get you the stolen office supplies from the Tribune Tower.
Great.
All right, so stand by.
Greg Jacobs has some coffee cups in that little drawer by the desk also.
You know, if you go, what's that? Oh, yeah, you can carry. You can absolutely carry. You know, you're right next to Annabelle Laval's desk, and she's never there. Yeah. We could rifle through that and see what's in there.
Yeah, she doesn't have too much stuff, though.
Oh, you've done it before? Okay. All right. I didn't realize it was something you'd
already done. I haven't gone through the drawers, but she's got just on her desk just a lot of pictures of her kids.
Oh, that's nice. Hey, if you got caught up in the nonsense of the President of the United States not somehow finding a way to criticize, you know, Nazis, who could find a negative thing to say about them? The late night contingency did a nice job last night. So there's a little time you can waste on the internet today. But yeah, I think you'll be most surprised, Dean, and you probably agree with me, by what Jimmy Fallon said. Jimmy Fallon, who is considered the lightweight of the late night guys when it comes to talking about topical
doesn't
stuff.
Doesn't usually get into political stuff.
Yeah, he spoke from the heart. Colbert was always great. We'll play a little Colbert with the mooch later as well coming up. All right,
Colbert's
back to this.
Monologue was just, he was on fire with this last night. I did see that last night.
All right, so Taylor Swift, she asked for a buck, right? And she got a buck?
She got a dollar. The case against the Denver DJ who was accused of groping her, grabbing her under the dress and groping her, his case was thrown out because he was suing Taylor Swift for getting him fired from his job by complaining to his employers. So that case was completely thrown out. Why do I keep saying that? Taylor Swift.
Well, because Jennifer Hudson's also on the list
right,
this morning.
Right, but Taylor Swift countersued him and won that case, and all she wanted was $1 just for validation on the whole thing. But she said that she wanted to make a statement about sexual assault and to make a statement for people who don't have her voice, you know, that this is completely wrong, and said she's going to be making sizable donations to organizations that help sexual assault victims with this.
And a restless nation can now sleep that the Denver DJ's case is over.
And that's just a lesson to all you other DJs listening this morning. Keep your hands to yourself.
Yeah.
Nobody wants your cigarette-stained hands all over you.
I remember the last time I took a picture with Milt Rosenberg before I left the station. I grabbed him in a special spot. I said, hello, professor.
Oh. I thought he got handsy.
I thought, yeah, because
turned out it was me.
Yeah, he was all hands.
The texter is going crazy with the name poll here, Dean, the texter name poll that you hate.
Yep.
For Dean, a bad name, it's got to be Mel. Any Mel?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I just think of the cook from Alice.
Such a good show.
I think they may be referring to one Mr. Gibson, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go, Dean.
Mel Cooley.
That's what I think. I love Mel Cooley.
Me too.
How about this? Aren't all bad guys in movies named Victor?
Yeah. Oh, no, but Vic Vaughn. We like him.
Neil made the list. Phyllis made the list.
Neil. Yeah, that's a sketchy one.
Phyllis is my good friend. She's a dentist.
And this is not a surprise. Dick is also on the list as well.
Yeah,
Victor
Maitland,
Beverly Hills Cop, one of the great villains of all time.
You know, your microphone has an off switch as well.
you know you've got hate for Victor Maitland.
We talked about Helen Mirren. What happened on the Deadpool set?
They were filming a stunt yesterday. They're still shooting in Vancouver, and they were doing a motorcycle stunt. And the stunt driver on the motorcycle, it was a very accomplished rider, but it was her first film. It was a female. And did the stunt like four times in rehearsal flawlessly. The fifth time, the motorcycle went airborne, crashed her window, and she was killed.
Wow, that's awful.
Yeah. Yeah, horrible. Ryan Reynolds, who is the star of Deadpool 2, tweeted yesterday how he's devastated. The whole crew and he are heartbroken and shocked. And, you know, that's a huge thing when something like that happens on a movie. So.
Well, and it happens incredibly rarely because I can tell you from being on movie sets that they go to extraordinary care when they shoot stuff that's dangerous to make sure that people don't get hurt.
Right. They have a lot of stunt people on Grumpy Old Men.
No, but you know what's funny is one of the other movies that I did, you know, played a crucial role of other drug thug, movie called Crossing the Bridge, where I played a drug thug. There was a scene with a gang fight of sorts, and there was a gun. And the gun obviously fired blanks, but we spent like 2 hours preparing for this one scene where there was a gun that was going to be handled. And I don't even think the gun ended up being shot. But they wanted to be incredibly careful about it. Mm-hmm.
You always did your own stunts, too.
I still do on this show. I do all my own stunts on this show. Like when I get up to leave to go to the bathroom, that's me.
That's all you.
Yeah, if you're watching, that's me.
Wasn't somebody severely injured once and Walter Matthau quickly turned his head and hit somebody with his nose?
I believe that's the case. By the way, I could have been injured because I was helping Walter Matthau out of the set.
Oh.
Lance is a slimy name as the names continue to come in. Spencer.
Spencer Tracy, really?
I like Susan. This is from the 708. I like Susan, but my first wife was named Sue Ann, and that's what she used in our divorce. She got the house in lieu of alimony. I don't like Sue's anymore. I love this audience.
I'll add on to my Dracula, Lucifer.
Ah, nice. All right, fine.
There you go.
I don't think Dean understands the game.
This is my new baby son, Lucifer.
All right, will you come back tomorrow? We'll do this again.
I would love to.
All right, fantastic. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
You know anybody in your life who is... maybe later on in life and has an interest or a passion that they haven't pursued? Like, I remember when my mom passed away, I found this box filled with manuscripts. Mm-hmm. She's a terrific writer, but she never tried to get any of them published. And I didn't even know that side of her. Stuff she did when she was younger. She came from an era where women did not, pursue the stuff.
Sure.
Obviously anybody ought to be able to pursue. So it was a cool thing. And it always sort of made me sad because I read some of the stuff and she was a really good writer.
Right. And she didn't pursue it just because of that. Yeah.
And Mark, you lost your mom when you were very young. And I don't know if she ever had like a hobby or something that you always thought she should chase.
My mom was pretty aggressive. I mean, in our basement, she had a beauty shop. She worked for a company and that's like, you know what? I'm just going to cut hair down here. It's where I kind of learned my lessons about bigotry and race, Steve. Somebody said the wrong thing to her, and she brought me up and introduced me to Mr. Smith. I was like 6 years old. Hey, Mark, this is Mr. Smith. Oh, hello, Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith's a bigot. And then she waved Mr. Smith out of the house.
Wow. Wow. How cool is that?
How cool is that, right?
That's a great story.
Yeah, I figured I could.
How about you? Now, your mom's very active.
You know, my mom, very active. She retired. She took early retirement. She had worked for Inland Steel Company downtown for
And she's 50 now,
30,
right?
Yeah, she is. Okay. She is 50. So I know she's listening probably because she listens.
Just trying to keep you out of trouble. You keep mentioning her age.
But yeah, she worked for 35 years, took early retirement, and then discovered a passion for jewelry, you know, like gemology,
yeah, yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Studied jewels and fine jewels and learned different carats, and then had a whole separate career in the jewelry business.
Mary Vandeveld, is your mom in it? You know, you lost your dad a couple of years ago. Is your mom doing anything new now?
Besides gambling? No.
Oh, it's gambling. Yeah, oh, what a good hobby.
And then they have martini hour,
right? She loves
right?
the casino and bingo and everything. But no, my mom worked for my dad's company for so many years without pay. As, you know, an administrative assistant, or they called them secretaries back then, whatever. But she was so talented and so good at that, and she never was paid.
How about that?
You know, because she worked for my dad.
Wow. How about that?
For I don't know how many years, 30-some years.
Isn't it crazy? It's so crazy.
Just payroll, you know, all that.
All these women, like your mom, Mary, my mom, your mom, all of our moms basically kept these companies going and for literally less than minimum wage.
Plus raising seven children.
Right,
too.
Raising
just
kids,
seven.
Of course.
Just seven.
Raising kids.
The reason I bring all this up is Edith Vosevsky is on the phone now, and Edith is a children's book author. Edith, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Edith, the reason I mentioned the setup for all of this, tell everybody how old you are.
Excuse me, ask that again?
I said, tell everybody your age.
Yes. On August 27th, when I'm having a book launch, I will be 87 years old.
How about that? And she's a children's book author.
Awesome.
Go eat it.
Fellow August birthday. Woohoo.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The new book's called Leo and the Spirit of the Golden Boy. Where's the party going to be?
It's going to be at the St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Downers Grove.
And by the way, Edith, because she's hip like that, has her own website.
Yes.
EdithVosevsky.com, EdithVosevsky.com. I love this story. When did you start writing the book?
It's been almost 2 years that I have been working on this.
Why hurry?
Because I had to have a whole lot of research to make sure I got it accurate.
That's great.
Because I am honoring all the Native Americans who have been so mistreated, and the little boy that is named in the title Leo
uh-huh.
and the Spirit of Golden Boy, which is his horse, he is trained in horsemanship by a Native American farrier, and the farrier is a very religious Indian.
Mm-hmm.
Who has actually embraced Christianity, but he still keeps all the old traditions. And he teaches those to Leo. And he acts like he's a godfather to Leo. And my book is a look at how we treat people and how today's world doesn't seem to understand the basic principle of respect for all people.
And by the way, Edith knows a little something about this. She's the founder of the former Etiquette School of Northern Illinois and is an expert on manners. Now, give me, I know times change, people change and all that. It doesn't mean we have to like it. So, Edith, give me a couple things that you would consider basic manners that we just don't do anymore.
Say thank you often enough.
I agree with that.
To show real respect for other people, to try to be pleasant in your relationships, because that's really what etiquette is all about. It came with Louis the 14th, and when Versailles, maybe it was the 15th, I'm a little bit mixed up this morning.
That's fine. No, you're doing great.
But when Versailles was opened up, people came in and had muddy shoes, walked in the gardens, destroyed stuff, and he decided he was going to put a stop to that. And the word etiquette, originally in the French language at that time, meant a ticket. And on the back of the ticket that you had to have to be allowed to come in were all the rules that he wanted followed. So that was kind of the origin of modern etiquette.
I didn't know that. See, there you go. We've already learned something.
Nice. So from there, it just got more and more complicated, and some of it is just excellent, and some of it's, when it comes to table manners, sometimes they overdo it a little bit. Like, I went to a formal dinner one time, and there were 18 pieces of silverware
on the
table.
Oh, that's crazy. Sure, sure.
And you need, if you're ever going to be in those kind of dinners, you better know how to select the right utensils.
I didn't even know, yeah. I'll be honest with you, Edith, I didn't even know there were 18 pieces of silverware. Barry, before we run out of time, Andrea.
Edith, question for you.
Yes.
When somebody does something nice for you now, in the past you used to write a thank you note, but I know there's email and texting now. If you want to say thank you to someone, is it okay to send an email or a text?
Yes. In this day and age, it is. Now, if you handwrite a short note, it's far more appreciated, really, than the,
totally agree.
Using the computer, because it's just a very nice gesture.
Yeah.
And it's such a surprise now when you get a handwritten note. My mother instilled that, especially in my sisters, who are both disappointments to her. You know, well, they're not? Oh, I don't know. And a texter said, nobody gives up their seat to older folks on the trains and the buses anymore. Well, that's ridiculous.
They do.
It's ridiculous.
I have to use a walker.
Mm-hmm.
And people are so nice.
Well, it's nice to hear.
If I want to start, like if I'm in a shopping mall,
I
want to start from my car over to the building,
mm-hmm.
if a car's coming in the lane and they see me with the walker, they just stop their car.
And give you the time you need.
And give me the time I need, yes.
Well,
I'm just very thrilled that there are as many people that are that aware of being nice to somebody who has a problem.
Well, listen, you have no problems. You're 87 and you're going strong and you're writing books, and I'm proud to know you and glad to have you on the show. The book's called Leo and the Spirit of the Golden Boy. They've got a rollout party coming at the St. Andrew's Episcopal Church on August 27th. And again, it's edithvosevsky.com, EDITHVOSEFSKI.com. We'll talk again. You know, give me an interview when your next one comes out as well.
Oh, okay. And this one is just lots of fun.
It sounds like it.
We talked a lot about Leo.
Oh, no. You explained it well. I don't want to give the book away for free. And by the way, as always say,
it's got lots of humor in it.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. And as I always say, get two copies, people. You're careless, you'll lose the first one.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Joining us now is Governor Rauner.
This is what Speaker Madigan wants, to increase his leverage. He should have sent that bad bill to my desk when he passed it May 31st. He didn't want that, so he waited until August. He wants the crisis. He wants children's parents scared. He wants teachers upset, to increase his leverage in the negotiations.
Are you prepared to lose re-election over this?
I will never give up trying to help the people of Illinois create a better future for our children and our grandchildren. You know I'm a volunteer. I'm doing this out of love of our state, love of our home here. I will never give up working for the people of Illinois as a volunteer, no matter what.
9:12, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Happy Almost Republican Day at the State Fair. Is it Republican Day or Governor's Day? Let's go to Rick Pearson, Premier Chicago Tribune, and get your Chicago Tribune. Would it kill you, Rick? Get the paper. I mean, come on, get the paper.
Get two. Get three.
Get two or three. Come on, people. And I'm a subscriber, and I recommend it as well. I think the journalism in the Chicago Tribune's never been better.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say.
At Rap30 on social media and the host of the Sunday Spin. You want to plug there?
We're still putting that show together because we want to see what's going to be going on in Springfield this week, a busy week. You mentioned that it's tomorrow's Republican Day. Technically, it's Governor's Day.
It's Governor's Day. Okay, so it is Governor's Day. So what is Mike Madigan getting the governor for Governor's Day?
He's going to be giving him probably a couple of hours of testimony and then a vote to show that the governor's rewrite of the school aid funding bill, Senate Bill 1, isn't being supported by anybody in the legislature.
All right. So an amendatory veto within the powers of the governor of the state of Illinois means the governor can take a bill, not veto it outright if he chooses, and do an amendatory veto, which means he can change any part of it?
He can change parts of it, but some of the things that the governor did in this veto raise serious constitutional questions, and it would be unlikely that the General Assembly would have actually ever considered accepting his rewrite, because the way he rewrote the bill affected other laws that's something that you can't really go beyond the purview and the scope of the bill.
So the legislator, the legislature experts that Rauner has on his team, their job would be to educate him, if he's not already aware, that he's swimming up a creek that he's going to drown in. Why wouldn't they have done that, or did they? In other words, what's the goal here if he knows it's not going to work?
Well, I mean, I listened to his interview with you yesterday, and mm-hmm. he said that you asked him whether this went, was too broad and went beyond the scope of things, and he said that his lawyers assured him that everything was constitutional. That's lawyers take different interpretations. But I will tell you from what I know from past experience, you can't really go beyond the scope of the legislation in the way that he did.
So when the House votes tomorrow, are the votes there to veto this? And assuming that happens, where does it go from here?
Well, I don't think the votes are there to override his veto in the way that the
Senate override. Yeah, I said veto, but override. Yeah,
right. I don't think they're there yet. I mean, you played that cut of the governor talking about building up crisis and that kind mm-hmm. of thing by mm-hmm. not sending the bill. And certainly, I think there is an active movement to try to instill some kind of crisis mentality to try to lure Republican votes over to support the override. There's 67 Democrats in the House. You need 71 votes to override. You need 4 Republicans to do that. And so I think that's part of what the ongoing process is. But as much as, the governor talked about Senate Bill 1 and has been talking about it in recent days and his rewrite of it and giving more money to schools all overall, there are serious questions and concerns. And it's not just among supporters of the original bill, but it's also among many in the school community who say, well, there was always going to be more money for school districts in the first year. It's really how the rest of the years play out afterwards. And that's where the governor's changes in the bill have the most dramatic effect in perhaps affecting hundreds of school districts across the state and receiving less state money.
So, Rick, if they don't have the vote needed to override in the House, then what, it goes back to square one? Then there's no bill, correct? We have to start from ground zero?
I think, there are 15 days from when the Senate acted on Sunday for the House to consider this. So I don't think that tomorrow's session is necessarily the final action on this bill. I think, it's likely that we'll see the House push that deadline. If nothing happens by then, we're back at square one. As it stands right now, there is no general state aid school funding for districts. No districts that I'm aware of have said that they can't open their doors. But the question is, for how long? And that's where the real uncertainty exists.
There's a rumor floating around that the Republican day at the state fair, I believe, is Thursday, that they might push it to Thursday and take some sort of an action in an attempt to not embarrass Governor Rauner, but an attempt to just kind of show, we have the votes, we're going to hold it until Thursday. Are you hearing that?
Well, by Madigan scheduling, and actually Republican Day is tomorrow. And so by Madigan scheduling that session, that's all about, is to try to embarrass the Republicans on Republican Day, on Governor's Day at the fair, to have this session to call up his rewrite of the amendatory veto, have it get shot down, and then try to use that as leverage to support the original bill as passed by Democrats.
You're talking about listening to Rauner on the show yesterday. He used a term which surprised me when he said that the mayor collapsed into the arms of Mike Madigan. That's almost verbatim. Did that line surprise you?
Yeah, it did. And frankly, as much as we've seen the rhetoric between these two former friends, that was a new element in the rhetoric. And by saying he collapsed in Madigan's arms after the release of the Laquan McDonald shooting video. And I actually kind of wondered if that wasn't a way of him trying to start messaging for the day. But of course, then later in the day, he has a press conference, refuses to call the act in Charlottesville, Virginia, as domestic terrorism, is forced to clean up that mess by later issuing a statement saying, absolutely, it's domestic terrorism. These haven't been really great weeks for the governor since he decided to shake up his staff. And part of the reason he said he shook up his staff was because he thought that his message wasn't getting out. And in these past couple of weeks, we've basically seen him really kind of stepping on his own message, making unforced errors and not really comprehending some of the dynamics that exist.
Well, a couple of things there. One is there's a lot of things you can say about Mayor Emanuel, but one that I don't think you can say is that he is, whatever your definition of folding into someone's arms might be. It makes you sound like a suck-up, makes you sound like somebody's boy. It's not a complimentary piece of phrasing. It certainly doesn't go towards fixing the relationship between the two of them. And so that's part of what bothered me in that regard anyway.
Well, and we've seen that before where, you know, he has called people names or called them corrupt, whatever. And these are actually the people that you're supposed to be ostensibly sitting down and trying to negotiate. What good is saying, I'm for compromise, I'm for anything? Compromise requires meeting with these very same people that you're, you know, castigating in terms. I mean, and I know the governor's point is, well, that's politics. You know, we all set that aside. That's the nature of the game. But when you ratchet up rhetoric in that way, and I don't think anybody who's ever known the mayor or met the mayor, you know, he's his own guy.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
That's part of his political success. I don't know that. I mean, to me, it's an escalation of the anti-Chicago rhetoric that the governor has been using as a way downstate on the schools issue, on any number of issues, basically as base building, trying to restore support in base areas in downstate, but more importantly, perhaps in the suburbs. Because when we saw the presidential in 2016, basically those Republican-leaning collar counties, they went for Hillary. And that kind of was a signal of changing demographics, perhaps changing attitudes there. And for the governor to be successful in reelection, he's got to restore support in the collar counties.
You know, the numbers are what they are, right? But the thing, I mean, I remember when the governor was the candidate and he came on the show, and he's undeniably successful in business. He's a billionaire. So he has tremendous business success. But we've seen what tremendous business success translates to in politics in the most frightening way in Washington. Now, I'm not equating Bruce Rauner with Donald Trump in the fact that I think one's a lot smarter than the other. And I think you know which one it is. It rhymes with Rauner. It's a lot smarter than the other. Having said that, I remember, Rick, and you may have been in studio when this happened, but I remember when the governor was in one of the times he's been in, and I said, what are you going to do when people start to say no to you? Because, you know, when you're running a business as a CEO, even if people disagree with you, you can ultimately get a yes. Where in politics, that's never a guarantee. And to my mind, one of the biggest problems that the governor has run up against again and again and again is the final acceptance that he is not the last word in the state to get things done. Because I salute the effort to change things. There's no way you can look at the state of Illinois when the governor assumed office and go, yeah, it's going fine. We'll just keep things chugging along the way it is. So I salute the effort, but I think he's made his job harder than it needed to be.
Well, I spoke to former transportation secretary and Peoria Republican Congressman Ray LaHood over mm-hmm. the weekend at an event with Aurora University. And he's written a book about, you know, his memoirs, his life of bipartisanship. And one of the things he said was that this trend of business people coming into government thinking that you can run government like a business hasn't worked out. And of course, naturally, he points to Donald Trump. He points to Mike Scott, Florida. He and points to Illinois. Mm-hmm. And as you say, it's not just a top-down kind of driven enterprise like a business. You have three branches of government. And to get anything done, you have to have relationships with them. And one of the things that with Governor Rauner and his agenda, and yes, he scaled it back from 44 points as a candidate, you know, down to 2 or 3 points. But still, you need to find ways to get 60 votes in the House and 30 votes in the Senate. And you're a Republican governor. It's a Democratic-led legislature. The ultimate goal is to try to find ways to navigate to get something for each side and get to the 60 and 30. But we're in this life of politics now, this world of politics. It's winner-take-all on either side. And anybody who is viewed as being a compromiser is basically being viewed as a traitor to the ideology and principles of their political party.
Rick, I always thought as well that you need a working relationship between the mayor of the city of Chicago and the governor of the state of Illinois. And we had that initially with Rahm and Rauner being somewhat close, or at least had a political friendship, if you will, and that's completely broken down. Do you see that as being a problem for Governor Rauner down the road as well?
Oh, absolutely. Now, you know, let's face it, Chicago is always going to be voting Democratic in a gubernatorial election. We know that. But also, look at the fact of Chicago and the Chicago metropolitan area is the economic driver of this state. And to move things forward, particularly with all the financial problems the state has, you look at these rural areas downstate that are just devastated by loss of manufacturing. That's frankly where, you know, you're seeing some great exodus is downstate, not just in Chicago area. But to keep the state economically viable, functioning, and to grow, you need to be working in efforts to help support those ways to grow in the Chicago metropolitan area. That's where the population is. That's frankly where the money is. And if you don't have relations with the mayor, with the county board chairman in the 6-county area, if you don't have that kind of a relationship, nothing will happen.
It's Rick Pearson, and he is in your Chicago Tribune, online at chicagotribune.com. Get the paper, will you? Come on. Get 2 or 3 copies. Rick needs the cash. At Rab30 on social media, and the host of the Sunday Spin every Sunday morning at 7, the first word in Sunday political talk. Set you up for the whole day. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you so much.
See
appreciate it.
That's Rick Pearson. It's 9:25, back in a moment with more of the Steve Cochran Show. And then, in just a few moments, everybody loves this show, Chopped, man. You all love Chopped.
Oh, have you ever seen it? It's fantastic.
The only time I'm watching it is tonight when Leanne Whippin's on.
I am so excited
Grill
for her.
Masters Battle 3.
She has the...
She's from Southern Cut.
Not to sway any of the judges, not that they're listening, but she's just the best. Love her barbecue.
She's tremendous.
Remember she brought her ribs in?
Yeah, she's going to be here again in a few minutes. It's not...
What? I love
ribs.
It. She's so
9:26, more in a moment on 720 WGN. Can we do a little mooch here before we go to the big story? Anthony Scaramouche, will you do the Fandango? Last night he was on Colbert. And the mooch on Colbert was asked, were you mooch, man, this is cut 5, by the way. We'll go 5, 6, 7. Mooch was asked by Stephen Colbert, you know, what was the reason that they even brought you in the first place, Mooch?
What yeah. is going on? Were you brought in just to get rid of him and
I don't
Sean
want to say
Spicer?
That. I don't want to say it that way.
But
I would
part
say,
of your job?
I would say...
Would you say it? Say it like the mooch. Say it like the mooch.
Well, there was no...
Give me some mooch. Give me some mooch here.
So the mooch with Long Island would say there was no love lost there. Obviously, look at the picture. Okay,
yeah,
there's
sure,
no love
exactly.
lost there.
Yeah.
And so that was caught by a Wall Street Journal photographer before the president did it, which was a great interview with the Wall Street Journal. The weird thing about my relationship with Rice is we were actually pretty good friends when I was a political donor writing checks to the RNC.
Mm-hmm.
But once I became part of the administration or was about to enter the administration, for whatever reason, it was a little more adversarial.
By the way, Steve Bannon is on the Mooch's radar as well. Here's Colbert on that.
Who's leaking now? Is it Steve Bannon?
Well, I've said that. I mean, I'm
just saying. Say it now. Say it to these.
Listen, I've been pretty open about that. Let me explain it. Okay, but I said he was, and I obviously got caught on tape saying he was, so I have no problem saying that.
Okay,
but
is he going to be gone in a week?
That's up to the president.
But what do you think? What do you think? What does the mooch think?
Well, if it was up to me, he would be gone.
Okay,
but it's not up to me.
And finally, Mooch, 10 days. Mooch, we barely knew you. What happened, Mooch? How could it have all gone so wrong?
Do you feel burned by your experience at the White House? You were there for 10 days.
No, you're extremely loyal
to the president.
Not.
Even to this point, like, you know, we're shown the door, as it were. Do you feel burned or backstabbed?
Not at all.
Really?
Well, let me put it this way. When you take a job like that, Stephen, you know that your expiration date is coming. I didn't think I was going to last too long, but I thought I'd last longer than like a carton of milk. I just didn't last that long. Okay.
You were like a bag of raw shrimp.
You bought your eggs and you were cooking them the day I got fired. It was totally fine, right?
Okay.
My point is that you take that job recognizing that you're serving at the behest and the duty of the President of the United States, and if he doesn't want you there anymore, then you got to respectfully leave, and you got to leave with honor. I made a lot of mistakes. I've tried to own up to those mistakes. But let me tell you something, okay? And you know this, okay? You can just feel it from me. I'm an honest person.
Wait a second. Don't use me as a character witness for you.
Okay.
I don't know.
I won't use you.
I met you like 5 minutes ago. Right, what are you talking about?
I won't use the mooch.
I'll sign a loan for him. What are you talking about?
Hey, I'm always good on loans.
By the way, a carton of milk can last a little bit longer than 10 days.
Oh, really? So a carton of milk is actually more reliable than the mooch.
Organic's like a month.
Oh, is that right?
He's right. I had no idea. Lactose-free can be a month.
Well, that's exciting news. Listen, here's the deal. We'll take a break. We'll come back to the big story in just a second, and much more to come of this show, because we're not done until 10 on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
And a little bit of chicken fried. Cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio.
If you love the show Chopped, we've got our favorite contestant in studio. Leanne Whippin's here, and she is chef at Southern Cut, which is a restaurant that's got to be on your must-eat list in Chicago. And normally around this hour, she's seeing the sun come up and cursing at it, but yet she came in here to be with us, and we appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
You look great.
Thanks for having me. Thanks.
And the show is tonight.
It is. So it's going to air on Food Network at 9 o'clock our time, 10 o'clock Eastern.
And this is what round of the battles?
So this is round three, and this is a grilling tournament, so it's not like a one-show deal. So you have four shows with four chefs, and then the winner of each of those shows goes to the final show for $50,000.
Which is a nice little bonus.
It is.
Nothing wrong with that. Before we get to the show, by the way, Andrea, I'll try to do the entire interview off.
Pretty much.
I was so excited, though, because it's Leanne, it's Chopped. I want her to win.
But let's talk about Southern Cut for a second. Tell everybody where it is, when you're open, and why people should go.
We're open 365 days a year. Open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast, serve lunch, dinner. So we're there all the time. It's at 198 East Delaware, a block off of Michigan Avenue, right near Water Tower, so it's conveniently located. And we have a smoker right in the middle of the restaurant, so you can see me smoking the meats right in front of you. And we have a little chef's table there, so you can ask me questions and even get a little tour of the smoker and how we do everything there.
Yeah, and a few inside tips you can take home if you're serious about it.
Absolutely.
What are you guys making for breakfast?
So we are doing barbecue benedicts, we're doing a barbecue omelet, we're doing brisket hash, we do a brisket skillet, so quite a few things. But then we also have, you know, the normal omelets, you know, French toast, pancakes, for those who don't want barbecue for breakfast.
Is it tough to grill breakfast?
No, not at all.
Let me restructure this. Is it tough for the regular person?
Yeah, because, you know, smoking takes a long time. We're smoking the briskets and the pork shoulders for 12 to 14 hours overnight. So that's not easy to do at home. That's why you got to come see me.
By the way, they have 400 security guards that work that restaurant because they all want to just smell the place overnight.
God, just walking by smells
good. Yeah, it does smell good.
All right, now prepare yourself. Here comes Andrea with questions on tonight's Chopped.
All right, first of all, you should win. I hope you do. I know you can't divulge, but when they they give you the ingredients. You get four ingredients, and they're usually crazy. I was telling Steve, like, gummy bears, a piece of cilantro, a pig's head, and cinnamon, or whatever it might be. How do you practice for something
so
like that?
So I had my sister ask me, you know, she would throw basket items to me over the phone, and I would have to be quick on my feet and try to figure out what I was going to do with those ingredients. That was very helpful because I'm not going to sit there and cook the ingredients, but at least, you know, you kind of figure out in your head and then you know the process of
how
mentally
to cook
prepare.
It.
So that was very helpful for me. I did watch some of the grilled previous years. This is the actual fourth year. So that was helpful too. But really, when it's all said and done, it's you open the basket, you get absolutely no previous look at it. It is what it is. You open the basket, you've got four ingredients, 20 minutes, and what the hardest part is in that 20 minutes, they have a pantry, and it also has like things like stick wands and, you know, Cuisinarts if you need those items to prepare it. So you might have to take two trips to that area because you can't carry everything. And then they have another area that is strategically a little bit too far where you get your plates because you have to pick out your plates that you actually plate on. So you have to incorporate and think about all those things. They did have a kettle grill, a smoker, and a gas grill. They are already hot. Well, I thought my gas grill was hot. You'll see that. there's a lot of twists and turns in the show because, you know, you may look down, and then this did happen to me, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm missing an ingredient, and then I have to go into action and figure out how to get that done in the last, like, minute or two.
Can you go back as many times as you want?
You can. Okay. You can, but there really isn't time to. You have to be very, you know, like, really one
strategic.
Or two, you have to be one or two trips. That's it. So the four ingredients that I got was, you know, was a weird protein and this blue blob of a thing. I didn't know what it was. And then some sort of a cheese. And the last thing was an alcoholic beverage.
How do you cook a blue blob if you don't know what the blue blob is?
Well, that's what you'll see tonight. Okay.
All right. Now we've
two
all...
Two of the four people knew what the blue blob was.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Okay. And so my competitors, you know, which, you know, it's out there now. Carson, who's been a friend of mine, he's a true pit master. We work on the circuit together. I wish that this competition incorporated true grill masters versus top trained chefs. So one of the chefs on the show is a top French culinary chef, and then you have another chef that's, you know, just been crazy, you know, and everything that he does. It makes it a lot easier for them to take these unusual ingredients, whereas grill masters were used to, you know, your traditional proteins and what have you. So that was the biggest challenge for me. So when I did TLC Pitmasters, I did fine, you know, because that I was in my comfort zone. So this was not comfort zone. Right. 20 minutes is not a lot of time. And it goes in a flash. Your adrenaline is going. You're allowed to call out and say time, you know, so you know how much time you have left, which, you know, I did a couple of times just so you can kind of figure out in your head what you should start and what you should, you know.
Okay, but I'm trying to break this down. So you've got to take the four items you see in a very quick period of time, mm-hmm. figure out what you're going to make, mm-hmm. and then determine how long it's going to take to cook that, prep it and cook it.
And then get additional ingredients to enhance it. So,
is there enough other ingredients for you,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, it's a full pantry.
How is 20 minutes enough time?
It's crazy.
That's the challenge. And some people don't get, and you will see, don't get all the items on the plate. So I will say that I was successful in plating all items. So,
but if you tell us anything else, you'll have to kill us.
This was my big disadvantage. I was deathly sick for the show, and they even took my temperature that morning and was debating whether I was going to be on the show.
What, did you have, like, the flu or something?
I ended up with pneumonia. So I was feeling rather ill, and
wow.
If you notice, I don't taste any of my food because my taster was gone. So I was at a huge disadvantage to even know what my food tasted like.
So what's the final judging is taste, appearance, and?
I don't know if it's tenderness, that's usually, but it's the overall, you know, appearance of the plate, you know, how you put it together, you know, and also you have to take into consideration if it's the appetizer round, you don't want to throw a full T-bone on there because you will get marked down for that. So it has to be constructed in a manner that fits.
It's got to make sense.
The meal, it's got to make sense. So you have to make four plates. You do three for the judges and then one that's for a beauty shot.
When did you tape it?
We taped it in, I think it was April, so it takes quite a lot of time to edit it out.
How much tougher have you been on the kitchen since you came back? You know what I made in 20 minutes?
No, actually.
They gave me a shoe, a wiffle ball, a slice of ham, and some peanut butter.
You know, it's funny. When I was walking away, and this was, you know, just at the end of all of the taping, and, you know, you take your little suitcase and you walk to your car that's going to the airport, and I was like, I feel like I'm on The Bachelorette.
My rose.
Instead of a rose, you hope you get a rib.
Yeah, a rib.
It's kind of weird. And it's, yeah, it's going to be an exciting show tonight. I don't know how they edited it out, but
Well, how long does it take to shoot it?
It took 14 hours. We had a 5 o'clock call time, so that was also very challenging because they were filming me the night before. You had to cook a dish, like, for fill-in. So I was cooking late at night, and it was cold there. We filmed it in Queens on a pet farm. So it was like the wildest backdrop, and it was probably one of the largest production crews I've ever seen. They had big booms, and it was about a city block, you know. And about,
is it that big TV facility in Queens that everybody uses in New York?
No, not at all.
They so it's a private set.
It's a private set. So they rent out these sets. Like when I did the All-Star Pitmasters, we were on the set of down in Calabasas. Well, that was one of the shows. And it was one of the movie sets for, I forget, that Dracula show or whatever it is. Oh, okay. So they do rent out these properties.
Dracula loves barbecue.
Yeah.
All right, stand by. We have more questions for you. And we'll come back. Southern Cut, you want to give out a phone number?
Sure. 312-280-8887. We're taking reservations for our viewing party tonight. The show airs at 9 o'clock, and we'll have giveaways from barbecue sauce to our infamous family recipe of pig powder dry rub. And I'll be there, of course, to answer any questions. I have a friend who is very famous in the barbecue world, Ray Lampe, who will be in attendance.
Wow, cool.
Yeah, so he'll be there as well. And so, yeah.
And Carm, wasn't that your name when you were a stripper, pig powder dry rub?
It was, Steve.
I thought it was, yeah.
Thank you.
Back with more in a moment. Bill and Wendy coming up on 720 WGN. All right, it's 9:55. We only got a couple minutes left here. But Leanne Whippin was nice enough to get up and come in and talk about Grillmasters Battle 3 airs tonight. It's 9 o'clock our time?
Yes, it is.
Oh, let me get a microphone on for you. Sorry about that. 9 o'clock tonight our time.
Yes, it is.
And
it will be very exciting. Come to the viewing party that we're having at 198 East Delaware, Southern Cut Barbecue. We'll have giveaways. I'll be there.
You invited us for dinner or lunch last time you were in. Why haven't we gone over yet?
We got to go over.
What are we doing? What kind of show is this? What are we doing?
I'm in. Hey, I am in.
So I just want to tell you a little bit about the pre show thing. So there's thousands of people that apply for the show. I actually did not apply for the show. They came to me. And I had to do, you know, a bunch of Skypes and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
So you get recruited.
When I made the cut, I was, like, thrilled. They even told me after the show, they're like, you should feel so proud. You're, like, one of the first people that we've taken on the show that didn't apply and, you know, made it first cut. So that meant a lot to me.
Sure, of course. And tonight, when it airs, what's the first thing we see? Are you one of the – oh, you don't know how it's edited. So you don't know where they put you?
I will be immediately on the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
so good. They'll have all four chefs to start. So, yeah, and they do a little biopack. So they try to build in a story because they think that's important. And then they actually interview you after your rounds, and you talk about exactly what you did. And so it's not just a matter of cooking. It's the story and – yeah, so it's an interesting program for sure. High adrenaline.
Isn't it one of the highest rated food shows?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. It's such a great
especially
show.
The grilling. The grilling is one of the top ones of all the chop shows. Sure.
And Lynn, you were happy with the judges as far as their knowledge of what you were cooking. It wasn't just like Howie
They're extremely critical, but it's for the right reasons, and they really break down your dish and tell you exactly what's great about it, what's, you know, not so great about it, what you know, sometimes even what you could have done differently. And so that's kind of nice, you know, to be with credible judges.
But honestly, as a chef, and I know we're late here, but as a chef, you've achieved at the highest level. You're running your own joint in town. It's not like you just fell off the chef truck. You're not making SpaghettiOs. So at some point with the judges, how do you avoid the urge to go, hey, blow it out your butt, buddy. I've been doing this since
I
was 7.
You know what? I almost did defend myself at one point, and I just shut up. I don't know why, but I just felt like I didn't want to get into like
a
battle
feeling,
on national TV.
I
tend to defend myself. I'm just that type of person.
I was just going to say that. I just have a feeling that
I do have a regret, and I think looking back that I would have, I think, said a few things that could have defended myself in.
Yeah, and I don't want to give it away, but again, her four ingredients are a postage stamp, a box of nails, jello and cilantro. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So I do have another show coming up also. It's going to be on the Cooking Network. It's going to come up right around Labor Day. I had the pleasure of working with the dynamic pitmaster from Brooklyn who does the Big Bad Barbecue Brawl. His name is Shannon Ambrosio. He filmed here, and I was here in Chicago, and he goes head-to-head with, you know, what's known, you know, in a particular location. You know, we're known for, you know, hot dogs or whatever, pizza.
Sure, sure.
And so I'll actually be on the other side, judging side. So it's kind of nice to do that.
Payback side. Yeah.
So I'll keep you posted on the air date. Payback, so that'll be fun.
tonight, one more time, again, the viewing party at Southern Cut starts at what time?
It starts, well, you can come in before it. The show airs at 9, so we'll be doing giveaways before. So you're welcome to come in anytime before. And just give us a call, 312-280-8887, no charge. And it'll be a fun party.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nice to see you.
Back with Bill and Wendy next.